Great, thank you. Appreciate the invitation. Like some of the other speakers said earlier, there are a lot of people who could talk on this particular topic, a lot of irrigation work done in many locations. What I'd like to do is look at a number of different type of practices, a number of examples that we have based on some of the work that we've been involved in out in California in a semi-arid, arid zone where really full irrigation or something approaching that has been basically standard practice. However, as in most things, good irrigation management decisions are becoming more complicated all the time. The best choices or most cost-effective choices keep changing because we keep getting differences in situations such as water availability, cost of equipment, labor, environmental conditions, competition for less stable water resources, salinity issues, groundwater limitations. So all of our options keep changing. Some of the choices to consider include things like irrigation system choice. I'll mention a little bit about that, but I'll say up front most of my examples I'll talk about are comparisons between some micro-irrigation, subsurface drip work versus furrow. How you operate or manage those systems certainly has a big impact potentially, and I'd like to make some examples of plant responses and sensitivity to water and nutrient management and how that can be important. I'll give you a couple of examples of some things that have been used very effectively in our area. Some simple things, really, looking at opportunities to eliminate or delay irrigations. And this basically is kind of keeping in mind how the plants are progressing during the course of the season and look for opportunities, for instance, to do something like eliminate an early season water application. I'll give you an example with cotton that's relatively insensitive early on up until about 7, 8, 9 node stage to water availability. So jumping the gun and irrigating early kind of starts the whole process of irrigation earlier than necessary, and that may be wasted water in some part. Conversely, again, using cotton as an example, at the other end of the season, we can look here at late season water applications that are not needed in some situations. If we've got a very good early fruit set on the plant, you have some water limitations, a lot of times there are opportunities in the late season to make a decision to either irrigate or not irrigate that one last time. If it's not going to give you a big benefit, then that's one opportunity, particularly when water's expensive or limited availability, to make a change. Give a couple of examples of how maybe we could use that. We've looked at leaf water potential as an irrigation scheduling tool. We've used this in drip and furrow studies here, and I'll just give you a couple of examples. This is a calyx cotton, and the different treatments, the T1, T2, T3, T4, are basically going from a relative, using leaf water potential as a scheduling tool, from relatively well-watered to increasing levels of stress as you go from T1 to T4, and the levels are shown up here on the top. And basically just what I wanted to show you is whether you're talking about drip or furrow data here and looking at lint yield responses, we actually had some improvements in yield by controlling some of the vegetative growth and actually had some good responses to some delays in irrigation. And at some locations, this type of effort to delay irrigations might mean that you can eliminate one complete irrigation during the course of the growing season. We have similar kind of data for Pima cotton. Again, things change. We used to be dominantly an Acala cotton producer. We're becoming dominantly a Pima cotton producer in California these days. So similar type of responses in Pima studies. In addition to delays in first irrigation, some other opportunities are to look at things like reducing pre-plant irrigation amounts. Again, might seem like kind of a no-brainer, but for years, a lot of our pre-plant irrigations were relatively heavy amounts. They do double duty in a lot of cases to refill the profile. They also, in a lot of cases, can help with salt leaching. So it's not like they were a waste, but if you're short of water, you're short of water in a particular year, and there you could accomplish a switch to reduced pre-plant applications by using things such as hand-moved sprinklers, expensive but very widely used in our area, drip or alternate furrow irrigation. Again, you can't ignore long-term impacts on salinity, but it can make a big difference in some water-short years. Another thing that we have a number of people looking at in more detail, like anywhere else, we have some variable soils, and it's useful with some precision ag tools, but a number of different ways of looking at variable fields and deciding whether you're trying to irrigate to make the field as uniform as possible. If it's only the bad area or the low yield response area is maybe 8-10% of the field, if you're short on water and irrigation water is costly, then one opportunity is to assess the size of that area, the relative benefits of trying to take better care of that weak area, and then make a decision on what you can tolerate. And again, as we mentioned, improved irrigation scheduling, both amount and timing. There's a lot of different tools that are available: plant water status indicators, soil water status models, weather station information. I'd like to give you a quick example again for cotton. A lot of different treatments here. This was an Akela, an upland cotton study, planting date, plant density treatments, growth regulator treatments. The only thing I wanted to concentrate on here down on the bottom is irrigation management treatments. Basically, we had one that we're calling NS or non-stress, which is a leaf water potential based guidelines for irrigation timing, versus one that was a delayed irrigation, and basically all that meant was about a 1.5 to 2 bar, 0.15 to 0.20 megapascal difference in leaf water potential. So again, a delay in irrigation. These are some responses over a 3-year period averaged across all of the varieties. And what I'd like to basically point out here mostly is that in most cases here, this is in a sandy loam soil test location, we have kind of a mix of responses, but in general, there's not a big difference with this 1.5, 2 bar difference in leaf water potential. And what this actually resulted in, this delayed irrigation over the course of the season, in this particular setting, allowed us to eliminate two within-season irrigations with really very little in the way of yield impacts. In a much heavier soil, a clay loam, deep soil, on the west side of the San Joaquin Valley, in many cases we actually had better control of excess vegetative growth, had a lot of deep rooting, plants did quite well. We were not able to save or eliminate an irrigation, but we had some differences in timing. But again, you can see in general that the yield responses are minimal or actually in some cases better with the delayed irrigation, which in each of these cases is the darker of the colors. This is at the 40,000 plant population in the green and 75,000 plant population in the blue. A lot of different information on irrigation scheduling. I'm sure every university has something similar. A lot of USDA information on irrigation scheduling opportunities. Some examples I'd like to give are when you're faced with a limited water supply, as we've been in the San Joaquin Valley in California the last year or two, what kind of options you have or can consider, and how do you think the crop might respond? And based on some work that Blaine Hansen has done over a number of years in many locations, we'll give an example for alfalfa, and that's a crop where we generally expect ET to be tightly linked to yield. So all of the options that we might look at that result in reduced water applications are likely to reduce yields. One option certainly is to reduce the acreage that's irrigated. And in arid zones, you're likely to see some stand damage if that lasts for a long period of time. Another option is considered and has been tested is fully irrigate early on when you expect generally in our conditions the best yields and quality, and then cut off or have a summer cut off on irrigations. And that is something that has been tested, can be quite successful in some locations. In real high temperature, very high ET areas, you can have some issues with stand damage. Another option would be to distribute reduced applications over the entire field the full season, such as eliminating an irrigation between cuttings. It's an option that you could look at with flood or sprinkler. Another opportunity would be to look at reduced applications per irrigations, and this is something that we do have growers that are looking at this even in alfalfa. Hard to do with flood or furrow. It's much easier to do with drip or sprinkler, either hand-move sprinklers or pivots that we have some growers starting to look at. If you have too small an amount of water, you're likely to get uneconomical yields in terms of covering harvest costs, though, so some other issues can kick in. By contrast, we could look at the same type of thing faced with a limited water supply that you're going to irrigate in a crop like cotton, where the ET is not always linked to yield. you might expect that some of the options could reduce yields, but not necessarily all of them. Again, as with the alfalfa example, we could reduce acreage. Yield impacts, certainly in a semi-arid or arid zone, are likely to be fairly severe if you eliminate irrigations or greatly reduce them, try to do dry land. Delay the first irrigation, we already used that as an example that can work quite effectively in cotton. Increasing the intervals between irrigations with the goal to eliminate one or more total irrigations per season. The previous example, we discussed that. And reducing applied water per irrigation. Again, this is something that we have a lot of growers who've done this in cotton and other crops where they'll use hand-moved sprinkler systems. Or in recent years, maybe center pivots to help manage growth, develop a smaller plant, and allow you to have reduced total season water applications. Now, some considerations when you're looking at a change in systems. Really, I'm used to the question of what does or doesn't work when you want to switch to drip, but a lot of these same questions would apply to evaluations of likely responses to system changes with other systems. Questions that really everybody ought to look at in that type of situation is there research or local evidence to suggest that a yield response is likely, and what would it be worth? How well would the system work in the mix of soil and other topographic type of situations that you have? How much savings in water or fertilizer are needed in order to justify the cost of the system and the change? Operating costs, installation costs all need to be considered. Do you have labor and expertise available to install, maintain, and manage? We've got a tremendous number of people in the vegetable industry in California that have switched to drip, subsurface drip irrigation. And if you've worked in it before, you know that the management and the maintenance end of that thing is actually incredibly time consuming. And if you don't have the labor for it, you're going to be in trouble. Compatibility of the system with crop rotation. We have a lot of people in our area who are interested in belatedly in trying to get into reduced tillage type of operations. And in a lot of cases, if you put in a shallow place drip system or something, that may limit what some of your opportunities are. Another very valid question is to look at what kind of actual water savings that can be achieved. Is the ability to save significantly on the applied water a vital part of the reason for why you want to change the system? Your ability to deliver on the water savings is actually something that can be highly variable. If you look through the literature, there's a tremendous amount of range in the subsurface drip irrigation discussions, everything from I used half the water to I didn't save any water. And so you need to look into the details for individual crops and situations. I'll give you an example. Here, this is some work that Bill Dattar did in California with USDA. And what he has listed as there's cotton lint yields on this graph and good soil and variable soil. And basically all that means is this good soil is a more uniform soil. It takes water reasonably well during the growing season in terms of intake under furrow. The variable soil has declining infiltration uniformity that can be real severe, some soil textural differences and all. And the reason for looking at those is I'll show you here, this is subsurface drip irrigation yields in year one and furrow irrigated yields in year one. And you can see in the good soil, really not too much in the way of differences in lint yields. In year two, similarly, not much difference in lint yields in the good soils. And in what he's calling variable soils or the poorer quality soils, there's a fairly sizable couple hundred pound per acre difference in lint yields. Okay, what really comes into play that really gets your attention if you're looking at water is net water applied in order to achieve this. These were, again, scheduled using leaf water potential measurements, plant indicators. And there's a tremendous difference in the amount of applied water in order to achieve these yields. Again, so this would be an example of a location where you can achieve a tremendous amount of water savings. To kind of recap this situation, to kind of give you another version of the story, the situation we just discussed here is this one on the left at Shafter down in Kern County, sandy soil, variable soils. By contrast, I've done a lot of work at the Westside Research Center, deep clay loam soils, potential for deep rooting, used leaf water potential to schedule again. In that type of setting, we generally can do a pretty good job with furrow irrigation. We generally see water savings of less than around 5 to 10% when we switch to subsurface drip. Yield responses are similar between furrow and drip. We might get a slight increase, 5% or so, in years with very high temperatures. And last, I wanted to give us some examples of some work that we did that's been getting some more attention recently. It's some old work done in the 90s on subsurface drip irrigation furrow comparison in alfalfa. And I won't go into the details on the treatments other than to say we had 40-inch beds with drip laterals in the center, 80-inch beds with drip laterals in the center, and we compared it with 40-inch beds growing that were furrow irrigated, and we also had a field lysimeter to measure ET. This is using Colorado River water. The main thing to consider there is that's somewhere in the neighborhood of about 1.2 to 1.3, 1.4 decisiemen per meter, so salinity is not extreme, but it is an issue at these kind of ET levels. We ran this experiment over two phases, a two-year period where we had the system installed fairly shallow. And the problem with that particular system was we had wanted to basically have the system running daily in order to keep the plants non-stressed and see how they would respond in terms of yield performance. But we got some surface wetting problems with a system installed about 12 to 15 inches deep. When we switched for the next 5 years of the study, we went to a deeper installation depth, closer to 2 feet depth. That avoided any of the surface wetting issues. We could basically run the water continuously and didn't have to phase back to maneuver around any of the harvest operations. Okay, with that in mind, then this is applied water across these treatments. The SDI subsurface drip 40 and 80s basically, for all the purposes of the study, performed very, very similarly after the establishment year. And as you can see, very similar water application amounts between the furrow and the subsurface drip. We had some upper limits on how much water we could apply with furrow, largely because of the surface infiltration aeration problems. But the bottom line in terms of yield performance is we had generally right around 15 to 20 plus percent improvements in yield performance over the duration of the study, particularly the second phase of the study, around 15 to 20 percent improvements. And what that meant then is our water use efficiency improvements by switching to drip in this particular case were largely due to yield increases, not reductions in applied water. We did avoid the surface evaporation and had more transpiration because the plants had higher, faster rates of regrowth. A couple things to mention, and then I'll conclude here. Salt accumulation issues is certainly something that did show up as differences in this type of study. You have a different management approach maybe required for drip versus furrow to deal with the salts. The patterns develop very rapidly in this high ET type of location. The option we use to deal with it is we put on sprinkler systems separately in the winter in order to basically plunge the salts down more effectively than what we could do with either the furrow or the drip. We have one quick thing I wanted to mention is we have a lot of growers in the San Joaquin Valley right now who are looking at center pivots. A lot of these people are ones who've been using subsurface drip for quite a few years, got a lot of experience with it. Their main interest at the moment in at least evaluating center pivot for some of the vegetable work, alfalfa and others, is reductions in labor costs. And I'd like to conclude by just saying that, again, these irrigation system choices involve quite a range of considerations. It's almost never just a question of water savings potential. So drip systems, a lot of sprinklers offer capabilities to deliver in an on-demand way that allows for deficit irrigation. We're going to have more and more people in our air production area in the western U.S. who are going to have to look at the deficit irrigation approaches as kind of part of the landscape, what you're going to have to do some years out of 10. Not all crops respond the same way to irrigation systems or deficit irrigation management, so we think still a mix of crops and rotation plans is going to have to be evaluated. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.